One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ash Millman.
Hello, from and afar.
And Rich Hudson, as I talk over everyone all
Hi,
over again.
Hi, from my room.
We're trying a more sophisticated setup. We've got headphones and microphones, and maybe that'll be clearer, but I don't know.
It's very exciting. Sorry, I was like, when do I speak?
No, it'll be clearer if we actually talk.
It might actually work for a podcast. We'll still figure it out. We're in like day six or something, seven,
I think it's day five of working from home, I think, because it was Tuesday last week we started. So this is only my fourth day, because I took the Friday off for the reason we're talking about.
So we pretty much just thought, we did a little bit of Doom talk on Friday's podcast, but you guys have dove into it across the weekend. So we're just going to pull that apart some more. Because the more we talk about it, I was going to say in the office, on Slack, there's a bit more divisive stuff kind of coming up. Some people really don't like the platforming. Some people, compare it to 2016's one, think that game was better. I think those people are crazy.
I am those people.
You're one of those people. So what do you think? How are you coming down?
I'm really enjoying it. I think Doom Eternal is an amazing game. It's really enjoyable. It's got so many things that I think are fantastic, but there is this big niggling, like, just thought of 2016 in my head the whole time, because I played 2016 right up until the Friday that Doom Eternal launched, and then played Doom Eternal the next day. So it was literally instantaneous into the next game. Mm-hmm. And I mourned 2016 in the process, because I was like, I miss these things so much. I miss the way that you pick up weapons from bodies, where you'd tear things apart to find like key cards. I miss the way that it kind of had like rooms full of things that you then battled through and did some exploration and stuff, where it feels a lot more platform heavy and arcadey than 2016 is in Doom Eternal. I still think it's fantastic, and I'm really, really enjoying it, and I think it's a wonderful, beautiful game. Big hype, etc., etc., but there's lots of things about 2016 I do miss.
Mm-hmm. They have changed like an absolute ton. I kind of want to get, like, because Rich, you were looking forward to this as your most anticipated thing ever, so how have you come out of it?
I have loved it. I will admit, when it arrived, like, I was buzzing, like, genuinely. Friday morning, I had my DPD text came through saying it's coming at this time. Your driver, what was his name? Greg, I can't remember. Gary, that was it. It's like Gary's 10 stops away, and there's me at my window, Gary. Like, Gary, where are you? And you know, he turns up, and I'm really excited. And I got into the game, and I started playing, and my mind just went, right, wait, am I loving this as much as I was hoping? But I think it's because I was, as you know, I was so excited for this game, like, ridiculously excited, that my expectations were incredibly high. Obviously, I did get to play some at EGX last year. I got a good sort of half an hour with it. Mm-hmm. So I'd already had a little bit of a taster, and that taster was incredible. But yeah, throughout the beginning of the game, I was there thinking, ooh, do I like this yet? Again, the arcadey nature, the idea that the when you're picking up weapons, they're floating in midair and spinning around on the spot. Yeah. Whereas mm-hmm. in 2016, you would go up and when you get the chainsaw, you pull it out of a guy who's already dead on the floor. There's a bloke already holding a shotgun mashed by a door when you pick up mm-hmm. the shotgun right at the beginning. That sort of more grounded aspect of the game has been lost in mm-hmm. Eternal. And yeah, they have made what is very reminiscent of like a classic video game. They've lent so heavily into Doom 2 on so many different levels. It has changed that whole atmosphere. And I think, yeah, going between 2016 straight into Eternal, literally day to day, will be one hell of a jarring thing. But the base mechanics, the base essence of it is still there. The aesthetic change is a big thing. Because I recall doing podcasts ages ago, this has been E3 podcasts, and not liking the UI, not liking the fact that Doom Guy grunts. Like, I just felt it didn't feel the same as what 2016 was. But now I've been through the whole thing. It is a sequel to 2016, but it's also its whole own beast at the same time.
Would you it's better though? Would you say it's better than 2016? Because that's my gripe. I think it's a amazing, wonderful game, but it's like a 9 out of 10 and a 10 out of 10 for me.
Oh, I think I would put them neck and neck, to be honest with you. Ooh. I think, yeah, they both do things very differently. Yeah, like, I think if you went into Eternal wanting that aesthetic, that gritty nature of 2016, you're unfortunately not going to get that. And I understand that's not to everyone's tastes, but yeah. I know, Scott, I'm not criticizing the game. I'm not criticizing the game in the slightest, but yeah, they are two very different games in terms of its aesthetic. In terms of the gameplay, Eternal has 2016 beat.
For me, like, the whole, like, the video gamey thing, like, the creative director Hugo Martin was like, we're making a video game ass video game, and it's like, here's some one-up tokens and weapons spinning around and stuff. And like, for me, those, like, I guess those grounded elements of like, oh yeah, retrieve the chainsaw from the dude and have more key cards and stuff, that's like the death of what Doom 3 brought to the table, which I just don't want anything of. So like, for me, it was just take everything that everyone loved about the 2016 one and just streamline it, just be like, you know, like, everyone knows what this is at this point, and so it can be like, you know, crazy quick platforming bits, it can be like floating weapons and stuff, and it's just this insane rush that I think for me is like, honestly, for me, they're not even close. Like, the 2016 one, like, I love the 2016 one so much, but I do think, because I played them, like, I went out about a week in between, because I replayed 2016's one when I went into Eternal, and for me, like, I think that the 2016 one feels like a prototype for what this is, and it's like, they nailed so much in 2016, but I think that this one makes so many advancements, even down to like making, you know, a dedicated chainsaw button that just works, the flame belt stuff, all the increased like double dash and the movement and everything. Like, this one, when you get lockstep with everything this thing offers, it's so much better for me. Like, I can't even go back to 2016.
Literally, the only thing I would contest you on in that little dialogue there, Scott, is the word streamlined. There is nothing about Eternal being streamlined. There is so much more to this game.
Focused.
Like, yeah, that it, like, down to the use of weapons and how you have to use everything. Like, genuinely, the only weapon I didn't find myself using literally until the final boss was the chain gun. I don't see any point in that. Yeah, I don't see any use in that weapon, but everything else you have to use, whereas in 2016 I could use the shotgun and the Gauss cannon, that's all I needed. Like, that's all I needed.
That's another massive thing.
And you literally can't do that in Eternal. They've changed things up so much. They've made enemy AI so much more interesting. They've made the enemy pool so diverse that you have to change up how you play to do it. Listening to Hugo Martin talk to Daniel Dwyer on Noclip, and he's like, look, you can't go into this as a mindless thing, because people said, oh, it's Doom, it's mindless. It's like, there's literally nothing about Doom that is mindless, and Eternal is that same kind of thing. And there have been people out there who have been hit by it quite hard. I know, as we've already discussed off pod, that the first couple of levels in Eternal are brutally hard.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, even if you're like, I'm not to toot my own horn, but I'm pretty damn good at Doom. And even those first couple of levels, when you first get to the Arachnotrons, God, they kick your ass, don't they?
Yep.
The first Arachnotron absolutely threw me for ages. I had it on ultraviolet, so I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to drop it to hurt me plenty. Like, just looking at that Arachnotron. But no, it's an incredible game. It's really well realized. The one thing that I really, really love compared to 2016 is the world building. I think looking out and seeing those massive, like, Jaeger-looking things, like, it looks like Pacific Rim in the background. I just think that's fantastic. And like, jumping on top of massive swords to fire them up to go through different holes in the realms and stuff, I think that is a real, real great step forward for it. I think the gameplay is really good. I just think it's so different to 2016 that I am having a little sad moment that I'm not doing the same things I was with that one. But I also think that's a good thing as well. It's just personal preference.
Yeah, for me, it's just like I said, I think I like the general approach that they took. Like, it's just, I like that they did away with like the lore stuff, all the codex stuff. It's so optional. Like, you get all those little pages that you can pick up, and it's like, if you want that wider sense of world building, it's there. But if you just want to be the Slayer and just walk through, and even in the cutscenes, people ask for his opinion, he just cocks the shotgun, he's like, whatever. And I think that, you know, you can play it that way if you want. I like that they I've expanded it in a way that it's still optional, but even them going into that territory is like such a meaningful advancement, and was something that I didn't get at all from 2016's one.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the lore stuff is good. I think it reminded me a lot more. I think Doom Eternal reminds me a lot more kind of Gears of War-ish. Like, ooh, it feels, because everyone's kind of like big, chunky, massive armor, and seeing the Betrayer for the first time. I don't know, it just very much looked Gears of War-y to me to begin with, which I think kind of, again, Gears of War reminds me of Space Marines. It's kind of like, it kind of lent into that whole fantasy thing that we've seen already. Whereas I think that it does lots of new things, that it didn't really need to rely on that aesthetic so much. But I think that opens up and spreads out much better as it goes on. But yeah, I still really like Doom Eternal. I think it's a fantastic game. I think it has loads to offer. Just 2016 did lots of things differently, more realistically, and had other things to offer than Eternal, which, again, not a bad thing, just a different thing.
It is weird, because it's like, it is video game AF. Like, they, like I said, they've got the power-ups, they've got that sort of thing, and it reminded me of the original Dooms. Like, they're really not bothered about convincing you about this really wide story delivered through cutscenes. It is just in the background, you know, you can't just go and play stuff. And I kind of love that, as like a, you know, you hold it up and it's like, this is a video game. Like, this is something that the medium can offer, kind of thing. Because there's so many games that get carried away with cinematics, and like, as much as I adore The Last of Us, like, some of that game's best parts are in the cutscenes and the characters and the writing, not things that are in interactive elements and, you know, things that are specific to games. So like, for me, I was like, this is like a perfect video game, like, as in, it exemplifies the medium. But yeah, I mean, Rich, where do you come down on comparing it to 2016's one?
I kind of already sort of been over this. I love them both. I mean, I wouldn't say no to them doing like the same game, doing like Eternal, but doing it in that more grounded feel of Doom 2016. It's weird. I don't know what it is. It's like, I almost feel like going back to 2016, it's going to feel like an entirely different game aesthetically in every single sense.
It's way more red.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot darker as well. Like, the thing about Doom, it's they've made it very bright, very colorful. Again, that's something that I was concerned about come the final HUD reveal at E3 2019. And it was very different, but I think I'm more intrigued to see how they would go for Doom 3, Doom, the reboot, Doom 3, Doom Eternal 2, whatever they call it, and how they go about that, whether they go the same way as doing this very bright and colourful aesthetic with a very arcadey nature, or whether they try something else again.
Because you think, like, they've kind of planted the seeds for the Codex and the wider worlds of Ash. I know you haven't finished it yet, but like, it's all like I said, it's in the background, but the seeds that they plant, the way that they flesh that world out in that universe, and they explain like the very fabric of heaven and hell and all that kind of thing. Do you think, would you guys want more of that, or is that getting even further away from what it quote unquote should be?
I like that. I personally really like that. I like a good codex entry and lore. Again, like you say, that you can tap into it when you want to and kind of ignore it if you don't. I think picking up the pages, having a little skim and being like, okay, what's a Sentinel? What's this? What's the other? And learning it across the way is really good. 2016 had the whole like Doom Slayer tenets or whatever it was, where you touch the big gross room.
The green thing,
and it goes rah, 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 at you. So it's kind of, it takes that and expands upon it. It's taken a lot of things from 2016, exploded them open. So as much as it's focused in on the certain parts of gameplay, I think it's definitely exploded them all wider and wider. It's gone, oh, okay, you like ripping and tearing. Well, how about ripping and tearing nonstop, baby? because that's what it is. It's almost impossibly hard to begin with, but that's also good. As someone who is an advocate of not enjoying hard games, the difficulty in this, I think, is perfect, because it just throws you straight in and says, okay, deal with it. If you need to change your difficulty, if you need to get used to using weapons, then you're going to have to do that, but deal with it. This is what the game is, but gives you options to make it more accessible across along the way, which is really good.
The fact that, I don't know whether you've seen this yet, Ash, when you are constantly getting dicked over, you get the option to come in with a new central set of armor, Sentinel armor, which gives you more health and more buff, etc., etc., which I deliberately didn't use. I it was the one point when I thought, do you know what? Fair on you, Doom. Mm-hmm. Like, fair enough, you're thinking, I can see you're struggling with this. The first Doom Hunter boss fight kicked my ass when I got to it first. When I eventually worked out how to do it, I breezed every single Doom Hunter I came across for the rest of the game. But I was like, you know what? Fair enough, you're going to do that. But for me, I'm like, I want to prove myself as a Doom Slayer. Therefore, I will continue to play on Ultraviolence and get through that. I completely lost where I'm going.
But I was going to say, for the difficulty stuff, I do love that they know how you're going to play it. I think I mentioned this on the Friday pod, but in the description for, like, if you pick Hurt Me Plenty or you're on the Ultraviolent, it tells you in the brackets, like, how much it thinks you're going to die. Yeah. And I that was completely true for me. It was like, because I, for the review, I did it on Hurt Me Plenty because I was like, I'm not just going to get stuck. I need to get through this and I'm going to replay the crap out of it anyway. So, I put it on Hurt Me Plenty and it was like, you'll die a lot at the beginning and then you'll slowly get used to it. And I was like, cool. And that was exactly the case because, those Arachnotrons, that was the first time where I got genuinely stuck and annoyed, and I was just kind of like jumping around, like trying to figure it out, and I just kept making the same noise where I was like, I can't, like, I'm not comfortable, I'm not having fun, I'm just getting, like Rich said, completely dicked on, and I was just hating it. And and then I was like, no, I'm not dashing, I'm not jumping as much, I'm not weapon switching, I should be flame belching as well, and it's my fault.
Flame belching is the thing I got my head around in the last act of the game. I was like, I should really be using this more so. I think it's when I realized when I blasted a huge group of them and it's like, wow, my armor's been refilled in 2 seconds flat. Yeah. It's like excellent stuff.
There was a couple of encounters that like towards the end when it starts throwing like absolute tons of dudes at you where I was just struggling with them. And I realized that actually the way forward was to just leap into the fray, douse them all in the flame belt, chuck down an ice bomb, then switch, throw down the other grenade, and then jump back and rocket launcher the whole lot of them. And that explosion of every single power up was just
go straight for
amazing.
The sticky bombs mastery and just fire five of them. That's literally all I did through the whole thing because they're so useful for multiple enemies. Cacodemons, Arachnotrons, even like Hell Knights and Barons of Hell, just literally spray them with sticky bombs and dash the hell out of the way every time they get close to you.
The infinite missiles is good too.
But even down to like the enemy design overall, like coming in, like after editing the video that Ash did for the enemies what represent and seeing more about the, and even watching Hugo Martin's video with Noclip again of describing the Doom, the new demons and what they do. When you've got things like the Whiplash who scuttle around and make sure you sort of break line of sight with everyone else because you've got to focus on them because they hit so hard.
Yeah,
focusing on them, fighting against the Marauders, which Ash hasn't found yet. Ooh, Marauders, Scott. I've not had your opinion on them.
They're fine now. I hated them in the review period because I was like, oh my god, just get out of my way. I just want to finish this thing so that I can say stuff.
As said, and, if anyone's listening that's stuck on Marauders Ballista, just use the Ballista.
I've seen that so much, like without context, just being like people just literally on my timeline just going, Ballista, full stop.
Ballista.
I know what it's about already. I'm like, yes, okay.
Just you've got a foot ahead on this. But even like the design of the Marauders, they feel like... something Hugo Martin was saying that he loved Sekiro and enemies with such very very specific attack patterns is something you see in Eternal, which I don't really felt like we had in 2016. It didn't feel as obvious. I know that when you look at something like the Cyber Demon or the Spider Mastermind, they had very specific attack patterns that you could tell what attacks they would do based on their animation. Whereas with the Marauder and also with the Gladiator, they are very specific and they almost feel like Souls bosses in Doom. And it sort of all my hours of playing Remnant from the Ashes sort of came up to this because it's like, look, this is like I'm fighting a Remnant boss as the Doom Slayer. I think their enemy design, the way they've actually produced and made these boss fights, even down to the ones you get later in the game, they are so wildly different, I felt. I just think the enemy design is incredibly, like, vastly improved to 2016.
That's another thing. Like I said, we said at the beginning about how they make you, like, switch between every single weapon, but then some of them have, like, specific uses. Like, the Gladiator, you need to get rid of his shield using an energy weapon, or, like, you know, you fight those little guys with the shields, you can overload them, or things like that. Like, none of that stuff. I mean, it was kind of in 2016's, like, but not... It's at the forefront of this.
I was there thinking, I want to go back and see if you can destroy energy shields with a plasma rifle, because I don't recall them exploding in 2016. No.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage.
Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Because I don't know, like, Ash, because you went straight from 2016 to this one, like, in terms of that stuff, like, enemy weak spots and, like, that whole combat chess stuff, like, do you like that stuff? Because I found it really overwhelming at the start, but then it all just kind of got there over time.
I think that's what the point I'm at the moment. Like, it's taken me a very long time to get used to the way that the combat works. It's good combat and it's implemented well, but it's a big shift from what I expected. I very much expected it to go Doom 2016, Doom Eternal, with the same kind of thread pulling them through, whereas it's adapted a lot. So that sort of part of combat and that, oh my God, I've got lost in my words there. The combat weak spots, all that sort of thing, I think a really interesting way of developing it, but they're a pain in the ass to try and find, I'm trying to shoot like my grenades exactly on the Arachnotron plasma rifle, get the shooting grenades into the Cacodemon's mouth and all that sort of thing. But I think that that's, again, it's a good thing. It's a good sort of difficulty spike from the way Doom 2016 started. And then went on and on and on and had that big spike of difficulty as you get towards the end. I really liked that. I thought that was a really good way of saying, right, here's all the stuff you've learned. Now use it in these horrible, overwhelming situations. But this one has just gone, okay, here it is straight away. Like, get used to it again. The get used to it method, I think, is really good.
The 2016, like, because at the end of that game's campaign, I thought it really burned itself out. Like, I felt like I was just doing the same thing over and over and over again. Like, just, it was, you know, it didn't have anything else new to show me. And I know that, like, obviously in Eternal, it's like, you get all your weapons, you get some abilities. The upgrade system lasts way longer. But I just thought, like, the level variety was more interesting and those enemies, like, slotted into them. It made more sense. Like, it felt more fun to be like, okay, here's another Arachnotron. Like, the only one I didn't enjoy fighting first time through was the Marauder. I just groaned every time he appeared. But like, in terms of all the weak spot stuff, I treat all that stuff as just optional. It's like, if I'm on a higher difficulty, you can, you know, zoom in and shoot off like an Arachnotron's head cannon thing, or you can just do what I said before and just double grenades, splash damage, who cares.
That's interesting, because I went in absolutely focusing on weak points throughout the entire game. Like, whenever a Mancubus turned up, get the heavy rifle out, scope in, shoot off both its arm cannons, and then then you wail on it, like take off its main points, then wail on it. It's the same with the Doom Hunter. Shoot out its sled. Don't worry about the shield. Just get rid of the sled. Get him out in the open, then wail on him. I think it thinks like you can take the approach of 2016 after you've done the eternal additions of combat, and then you can revert it back to how it is of just absolutely going mental. The sort of the running meme within Doom, especially back in the 90s, was the sort of joke of shoot at it until it dies.
Which
when you look at 2016, the only enemy that you need to be specific with your shooting in. Are against mancubuses because they don't take ballistic damage. You need to be using explosions and pinkies where you need to shoot with the tail. Whereas obviously everything in Eternal has that approach. The only thing in Eternal that hasn't got a weak spot that isn't the boss is the Tyrant, which is like the sort of cyber demon-y dude towards the end. You see a handful of those. They're the only ones that literally the codex says shoot at it until it dies. Everything else has a weak spot or some kind of weapon switch to play up to that. And I can understand that it's like, oh, they're just kind of making it harder. But I actually liked that a lot more than I thought because, like I said, I was so reliant on the shotgun with the grenades attached, and that's all I needed.
I was gonna say like, yeah, that stuff I just so treat it as optional. I don't know if that's what you were gonna say, Ash.
For me, it's more to begin with. I found it Eternal disappointed me, which is a very strong word. It wasn't like disappointment. I wasn't but it's the only word I can think of to describe what it is. It kind of disappointed me because I felt like my playstyle was very had to be one thing. It had to be go in, just try and survive these waves of crazy monsters coming at me, and not really. Pick weapons and do things, just kind of go through whatever ammo I had, pick up something else, use whatever ammo that had, because it's such a small little chunk that you get that you've got to try. Like, pick up a shotgun as much as you can till you run out of ammo. Okay, now my chainsaw's in my hand. Okay, chainsaw something, get some ammo. Okay, shoot some missiles, and doing that sort of thing. And that disappointed me because I was like, well, okay, I'm not picking my weapons. I'm not choosing how to do this. I'm just being thrust into the fray and then given things in my hands to use at the time. But I think, again, it's the learning curve, isn't it? You get given all that and then you learn how to implement it as the game goes on. Whereas Doom 2016, I felt like you were picking from the beginning how your play style was.
That's like a great crux of it because like that I love that. I love that they force you to use the entire arsenal and I love that you can never get complacent. They did literally say that going in, that like they were like, oh, you can't stand in one place. We're going to force you to keep on the move and stuff, which like that's totally going to be like a pure taste thing. I love that they make something that plays as fast and furiously as the soundtrack sounds. It's non-stop. But I mean, in terms of it just being like at some point that stuff can just feel like exhausting, especially at the beginning when you're just trying to roll with it.
This is absolutely my like first impressions of the earlier chapters, because that was my initial impression. It was, oh, okay, great. I'm not choosing here. I'm literally just trying to hang on by the skin of my teeth throughout all of it. But I think it opens up. But the more you go on, the more things you get, the more you get used to either using weak points or doing as much damage as you can by throwing in a million bombs and missiling it. I think then you start to go branching paths of how you work your playstyle, whereas Doom 2016, you pick your playstyle from the beginning, which very much is a shotgun and frag grenades. Like that was what it was. I tried to use that in this one is the thing. I tried to copy paste my experiences and put it onto this one. So at the end of the day, as much as I am saying, yes, I prefer 2016, this one has opened up and challenged me in loads of different new ways and offered a whole different experience that isn't just the same thing again. So it's still very much excellent, good, what you want from video games. Like, it's what you should be getting. As much as I like the first one, that tiny sliver more, there's so much I respect about this game that again, it's so replayable. You're going to get so much out of it. Like, I can't really like dunk on it too much. You know what I mean?
I love that it forces you out of your comfort zone. But I was going to say, speaking of comfort stuff, we should talk about the platforming. Where do both of you guys come down on that? I absolutely love it, and I don't mind it at all.
I did like it. I do like it. I think it's a really nice change, like actually using, like seeing the dashing and the monkey bar stuff in combat is so much fun. There's nothing quite like swinging off a monkey bar and headshotting something. You get that really nice pop when you headshot somebody with the scope. It's fantastic, and then landing on an imp and chainsawing it on the way down. It's the best feeling. And the platforming was interesting. I think it opened up a really more interesting dynamic for traversal. Like, as Ash said, the world building feels more interesting. And it's like, why are there gates with big bullet targets to open them? Who cares? It's a video game. Let's just do it. And I'm game for that. But there were moments when I just thought, okay, this is it's quite prevalent. It feels kind of like the physics puzzles in Half-Life 2. It's like, yes, we can do this. Cool. Yeah, cool.
Right.
Good. And I there weren't any points when I went, I sort of thought, oh, here we go, another platforming section. Fine, whatever. Uh-huh. But there were a few moments, especially in the cultist base.
Right.
The second part of that level into the boss fight. Like that section had a lot of very big open-ended infinite drop. Thankfully don't kill you instantly, they just respawn you with less health things. But there were points when I just thought, oh good, I'm jumping between things.
There's
again.
One bit where I think which would totally divide people, where it completely embraces the fact that it's a game, is the bit when you go down to hell and you literally have the same fire obstacles as in Super Mario World.
Yes.
And it's like they're just like rotating.
That is really, again, it's really, that. It's so stupid, but if you can get past the, like I said, the arcadey nature of it, then you just sort of lean into it and go, yeah, do you know what? Whatever. It's this aesthetic thing. It's a thing that's over the top. It's not the meat and veg of the game. The meat and veg is the combat, which again is so much better than 2016. I was going to say, Ash, I think as the game progresses, because once you've got that main roster of demons down, and I want to say like the pinky might be one of the last ones that you come up against that's going to be in constant presence throughout the course of the game, that's when it really starts to change things up and throw different things at you. Like when you go into a combat encounter, you have no idea what's going to be ahead of you, whether another marauder might spawn. You go, oh good, here's another one. Like once that all opens up, I think that will eventually shift your opinion over 2016. I can see what you mean about 2016 as well, but back to the platforming. I'm okay with it. I don't think it overstayed its welcome too much. I think it edged very close to it at times, but I don't think it's a completely detracting thing from the game.
My thing was like, if you add up the amount of time you spend platforming, it's like a couple of seconds here, like, you know, there's like a couple of gauntlets, like where you sort of do like something closer to a minute. But like, I was like, it's like 5 to 10 minutes of the whole game. Like, yeah, I fell off a couple of platforms, but like when you're replaying the game, you just get through it. It's just fun. It's a chunky way to sort of mask loading.
I think they're divisive. I saw people posting about them before I saw them again. Like everyone was tweeting about this like really early on. I saw people posting about platforming before it happened, and so I was prepared for it. And when it came to like the first platform moments and everything, I was like, oh, this is fine. Like I'm not bothered by this. I think it's a nice addition. It changes up levels. It's a new, different challenge. Like as much as it's about surviving hell and getting through it, going through all these little fiery, horrible traps and big chains with flames attached to them and everything, I think whatever, like cool. It's a nice addition to something that is already very silly and arcadey. It's the most video game you can get. So why not throw in something like that? I think there is a very, as insane though, I think there is a caveat of it's very, why not approach to gaming. It's very, okay, let's put this in. Let's see if this is any good.
Oh, I love and that though.
I was going to say, you're either going to be like, okay, that's amazing. This is so fun. Oh, wow. All these different things that I can do that's just video game nonsense. Or you're going to go, ooh, there's things that I prefer from the previous way that they did it, and maybe I wish it was more grounded, etc., etc. I'm falling in the middle at the moment. I like all the new stuff. I do like it all, but Doom 2016 unlocked something unholy in me. I love that.
I will totally say that, like, the first time through, when I was like getting through it for the review, like, I did find it was more so the last two bosses where I actually got like, oh my god, I'm exhausted by this. But it was just that I found that just over time, because I was lucky enough to have it like a few days before launch, that like once my muscle memory kind of adjusted to it, I found that when I went back into those encounters, I just was like, I was flame belching, I was doing all these different things in a way that like I just, my brain wouldn't even have thought of beforehand. And I know that's just like sheer exposure to the game, but I hope that that's like an intentional thing on their part, that they're like, here's all this stuff and it's going to take you time to sort of be able to be comfortable with it in a way that, because it took me time to be comfortable with the 2016 one too. Like I was getting mulched by that at the beginning as well. It's like, this is like its own personality or like way to play. But yeah, in regards to all the over the top stuff, I kind of think of it like anime. It's just like, oh, that's so anime. It's like, oh, that's so Doom, like, just, and it's very new age. It didn't used to have that personality, but like, yeah, they, for me, they can get away with big Super Mario flame traps and stuff.
Yeah.
But at that point, I'm like, well, what wouldn't they be able to get away with? Like, I'm kind of giving them a full-on free pass for everything.
But yeah. I think the thing about Idar, they always go about it in the way of doing it the best they can. Like, they don't, they said, like Hugo Martinez said, we've got a really stupid concept, but we're going to do it really, really well. And I think that's what separates Doom from something like under the same umbrella, Rage 2. It's right, like, hey, we've got this big, silly, boisterous, ridiculous thing, let's do this. And then you play it, and it's like, wow, this is really hollow as an out-of-date Easter egg. It's just, yeah, it was just a bit rubbish. But yeah, Doom, I think, has nailed that. And I think that's another reason why it's such an incredible title, because it's like, hey, we've lent into this big, silly, genuinely bright colours. It's not like Far Cry New Dawn or Rage 2, but we've gone, hey, we've gone bright colours, but we've still kept our own aesthetic on this. We've still gone and done the Mick Gordon soundtrack. I mean, even like looking at the pre-release stuff, did you see they released a TV spot for Doom Eternal which didn't use any of the soundtrack from in-game?
It just used a rap song
and everyone hated it. And it's like, what? This isn't Doom. You have your own identity. Please lean into that. And they have done that the whole way through.
That's another thing that I think I absolutely love, just on like a personal level, is that it's metal AF, but in that way that metal fans know that to not ever take the genre seriously. The whole point of like, one of the best things about metal is that it's big and dumb and stupid, and there's flames and guitars and everything everywhere, and it kind of gave me like Brutal Legend style vibes, where it's like, this is like 80s metal over the top, and I absolutely love that. And it's like, and it knows that it's dumb as shit. Like, it's just one of the most fun things, and especially when you find like his bedroom and those big dumb guitars, and he's got like a folder on his laptop that just says like, you know, kill compilation, and he's got a little plushie of himself, and I'm just like, yep, yeah, cool.
He's
like,
got copies. Know, like... He's got copies of Quake on his bookshelf. Exactly. He's got loads. He's got loads of books on his shelf that are like demon based. I think it says like Cacodemon in the Rye or something like that. And it's like I'm so. It's so cool. Like, even down to the, even back like to the soundtrack, they've really lent into like a quite literal metal approach in terms of its aesthetic. Like, when you go back to 2016, there's so much stone and rock and sort of dried blood all over the place, whereas this is genuinely more like a physical, like cold metal clinical approach. When you go back, because I'm playing through again now on Nightmare, there's so many like quite literal just metal skulls on everything.
Right.
Even the Slayer's rocket launcher has a big skull with glowing eyes on the side of it, because it's like, why the hell not? Yeah. You've got the Doom Hunter with his big rifle that's just a skull. Like, and they just lent into this so much. Even like the electronic side, the sort of demonic augmentations things, leaning into like the Arachnotrons from Doom 2 and how in the lore behind those and how that's been brought over to Eternal. There's so much like electronic approach to the soundtrack as well. I can't remember exactly when in the game it is, but at some point it's either during a boss fight or just like a late encounter on one of the levels, the music goes almost entirely electronic rather than metal.
I
love it.
It's just everything like that, where it's just like, it feels like the full package in a way that's what I mean about the whole 2016 was like preparing for this, because those original Doom games, like they didn't care about like backing or cinematics or grounded anything. It was weapons floating in the air and just go kill some stuff because you're the Doom guy and whatever. And like the little bits of story that they do give you, if they only really codify that and make it, you know, they have this whole backing without spoilers as to why he's doing what he's doing and things like that.
Those bits that they do put in front of you on a plate that aren't behind the codex are like, answers please.
But yeah, so we can wrap this pod up, where we have the hashtag WCGP over on Twitter, where you can leave little questions and bits and bobs and thoughts. So this one comes in from King Kaz, who says, is he the only one who wants an Ape Escape remake? Hopefully a US version. I don't know what the hell the difference is, but I would take an Ape Escape remake. I don't know if you guys played Ape Escape.
I haven't played Ape Escape.
I didn't play Ape Escape, but that's why a remake would be good. There you go.
It got me playing Spyro, which I definitely loved.
And you're all going to get into Final Fantasy VII as well.
Exactly, there we go.
Maybe. Yeah,
I think remakes of any and every classic game are a good idea. Like, Doom is a remake, isn't it? And Doom Eternal's Doom 2 again.
I mean, you're not wrong. They are leaning into that sort of approach, like a spiritual successor / reboot / thing.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff in Eternal that links back to those original games made me freak the hell out, and I absolutely loved it.
So I love that so much.
It's just the best. But yeah, so for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ash Millman.
Hello and goodbye. And I just want to quickly say, I do really like Doom Eternal. It is, again, 9 out of 10 game, and Doom 2016, 10 out of 10 game. That's literally the only difference. I'm here as the voice of devil's advocate, but yeah,
you're
goodbye.
Right. Just, yeah, you'd be as honest as you want. We'll do plenty more pods in the future. It'll all be good. And also, Rich Hudson.
I think they're both solid 10s, and I think everyone listening and Scott and Ash should go and try battle mode because it's great.
Oh yes.
It's very good. Just if you come against somebody playing as the pain elemental, back out because the pain elemental is broken as hell. Oh,
not
to
worry. For now though, we will catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.